Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we've got a special interview episode for you, welcoming back Bill Eberle to the podcast. But with me today is Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, both with Tilt Agronomy. All right, here we are today with Bill Eberle.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Bill.
Always a pleasure to be on the program. Always enjoy it. Appreciate it. This is number three for me.
Is that only three?
I thought it was more as well. You must be that good.
That legendary. Yeah, yes. That's me. That's, yeah. No, I'm
going to have to
that.
Check the record on that is one. It? I feel like you've been here more than three.
Okay. I am getting old.
I'm not going to do it right now.
Okay.
But I will check the I'll let Todd check the record. But we had our first five-timer recently.
It wasn't Gazer, was it?
No. It was Kevin Jarek, our local ag agent.
Okay.
He's been on five times now. So.
Wow.
And I thought maybe you were catching up, that you would have been...
I'm free next Friday.
Because I feel like there was one year we had you on twice.
Okay.
But but yeah, we will set the record straight at some point
that.
On that one.
Okay.
So, Bill, you are obviously a leading expert in all things dairy. Okay.
I appreciate that. That's a bit of a stretch. That's a bit of a stretch.
Okay. How about you've been involved in commercial dairy for more than 20 years?
There you go. Let's do that. I'm a guy who's had some awesome opportunities and been in the dairy business for a long time on the commercial side, but yeah, a guy who's been blessed with a lot of opportunities at a young age to get involved as this industry exploded in eastern Wisconsin. We'll go with that.
Sounds good. You're currently an account manager for Novanesis.
Novanesis.
Yes. Did I pronounce that
right? You did. Okay. It is not Novonis. It is not Novanis. It is not Novenison.
I thought it was Novanesis for a while.
It's new beginning.
New
Novonesis, like Genesis. Novanis. Whoops, excuse me.
Is that a little blue pill or what kind of? Sorry. It's not
it
a drug
sound
company.
Like a, yes, it does.
Talk to your doctor today about Novanesis.
Novanesis.
Side effects include death, diarrhea, strangulation, psychosis. Sorry.
But yeah, you've also written articles for Hordes Dairymen and have been going around doing some speaking engagements as well and talking about farm management. So
employee management, I like that. I like that kind of stuff a lot. Yeah, I think it's the big sort of misunderstood thing that we gloss over too much in our industry, like how much of everything we do comes back to people interaction and working with people.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about none of that today. But I'm just kidding.
Go back to episode 249, and we did talk about kind of how to work. Basically, it was an episode with you, Bill, and you.
Yeah, we've talked about that before,
about
employee management.
Your employee management stuff, and I do agree that sometimes we get too in the weeds on agronomy or just nutrition or whatever, and it goes back to old school. If you're not managing your farm correctly, then you have problems. So,
I don't know how many times I got to word this correctly, but yeah, you'll go. I'll have somebody will say, "Hey, can you come and something doesn't look right with my feed program?" And it's like, "Yeah, your feeder doesn't follow any of the rules.
Protocols, right?
Well, okay, I'll talk to him, but could you sample this, you know, for enterobacteria?" I'm like, "Well, I can sample all you want, but man, watch this guy. Like, well, I got to talk. Like he's not doing, like, yeah." So a lot of problems on dairies are avoided because it involves having to interact with employees and interact with people, and it's a lot easier to, you know, rewrite your protocol or pull some forage samples than it is to go talk to the feeder and coach and correct things and have some uncomfortable conversations. So, yeah, I see that a lot in my
people are scary, Bill.
People are scary, yeah. Nobody likes confrontation. I don't like confrontation, you know. But the reality is, you know, most of our problems on dairies, most of our challenges come from people issues. And you'll always hear me say, like, we're running these these incredibly complicated 365-day-a-year, 24/7 biological operations, and we employ immigrant labor from different cultures that oftentimes doesn't speak English, that people that are, you know, 18 years old. Right. And we're trying to mesh that into these wildly complicated systems.
And we wonder why we have problems.
And we wonder why we have challenges.
Well, we all know farmers are excellent bilinguists. They usually learn new languages real fast. And
correct. Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Well, not like you say, language. You got culture barriers. You've got what you just said is a good point. Of your, it's every day of the week, all day. There's no like, well, you know, take the weekend, come back Monday, we'll figure it out. It's
right. Like that milk pump just keeps on.
We're not, yeah, we're not shutting down the operation.
Right. Or like oh, we'll shut down today and go. You know, give everybody a company training so that they can figure this out. That's, and I've seen farms do that where you have, you know, certain times this shift's done, this shift starts, and you have a training. And it is trickier than other businesses that way.
In the company that I work for, we're a multinational company. We have all sorts of different people who speak different languages in our company. So sometimes something can get lost in translation. Well, if you're on a dairy and your employee who speaks Spanish misunderstands which is the soap in the milk house and which is the bleach in the milk house, they might blow up the milk house.
Right, or gas themselves.
Whereas in my world, did you see I was heterofermentative or was that homofermentative? Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? And, you know, like, I don't know. I'm trying to illustrate, like, sure, lots of industries have people that have language barriers, but man, on a dairy, it's kind of life and death sometimes with how dangerous these systems are. And so
you're operating around big equipment, larger animals that can do that. If you're right, if you're not on your game with communication,
people can get hurt. People can get hurt. So yeah, sometimes we take for granted on commercial dairies just how hard they are to run, as well as just how important it is to have good people, that's such a generic term to say good people skills, but just whatever, how important it is to have good.
Well, if you want to have a good business, you want to retain good employees. And the best way to do that is to have good communication.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if you're frustrated with them and they're probably frustrated with you because they thought they were doing the right thing. Yep. And if you're not in contact and staying up with them and, you know, if you just go and yell at them, like, why did you do that? You know, they're going to have a different relationship with you than if you can work with them, train them, and take the time to figure out the issues before they become a big deal.
The key to having happy employees is getting to know your employees, understanding what they are motivated by. Yeah. They are not you. So if you take the time to get to know what goes on inside their head, what they want, what they don't want, what they like, what they're motivated by, you will have long-term employees. The fact that they don't speak English just makes it exponentially more challenging. The fact that they're not from the same culture as you makes it exponentially more. You think of how much my boss, I have an awesome boss. I love working for the guy. We are the same religion, the same gender, same political party, same age, the same socioeconomic background, the same state. Actually, no, he's from Iowa. But like, we speak the same language. Think of how much easier it is for him to communicate and motivate me than it is for Joe the dairy farmer in Seymour, Wisconsin, to now have Jesus, who came from Guatemala. It's like, think of how much harder that is on a dairy situation than it is for my boss on the corporate side of things. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be tough to make that kind of connection. So, yeah.
I like this, Bill. This is maybe we'll have you back for more future episodes for talking on the business side, because I think that in employee management, how do you do that? Because it is, and I know you've got many stories of different things that have happened to you over the years, and some of them probably we could tell.
I was terrible at this. Yeah. I was so bad at this when I first started out as a young man in the dairy business. I didn't, and it wasn't that I didn't speak Spanish. It was I just didn't understand people. I just thought everybody was me. So, of course, everybody has the same drive and the same motivation and the same reason to get out of bed and inspired by the same things that I am. So I treated everybody as if they were me. Well, that's, you know, I had to go sell things and get just annihilated in my first few months and then learn how to sell before I could then come back to a dairy management role and succeed at it, because I finally figured out, like, oh, I'm not managing other Bill Eberleys. I'm managing, I have to get inside their head and figure out what they, how they want to be managed, though. And now I'm an employee. That's what's really cool, is now I'm an employee. I don't have any people to manage myself. I'm just an employee. So like, it's kind of a cool observation for me to be on the other side of the table. And my boss is really good at, like, he understands, like, I don't want to be promoted. I don't want to go to other countries and learn about their farms. I want to get up in the morning and I want to watch South Park, and then I want to go visit farms and talk about silage and cows. That's what he asks of me. He doesn't, hey, you want to go to this conference in Bolivia about corn silage? No, I don't. I have a coworker who I think she's going to be an exec in our company someday. She's awesome. Like, she wants to take on all these responsibilities and take on all these corporate accounts, and she's awesome. And you know what I mean? I think the world of her. So he gives her the, hey, do you want to go to this? You want to become the new company liaison to this multinational company? Oh yeah, she's all over that. I'm like, are you kidding me? You couldn't pay me enough to go do like corporate B2B sales at some multinational. Like, oh no, I'd much rather be climbing around on a silage pile somewhere and talking to Julio the feeder any day than, ugh.
Mr. Eberle goes to Denmark.
Yeah, that's, they don't know. No, it's, we got a good thing going. And yeah, no, that's not, that is not. But again, we're getting off topic here, but yeah, it's because my boss understands, like, okay, Bill, this is what motivates Bill. This is what he likes.
Yep.
This is what motivates Betsy, my coworker. Like, this is what she wants out of the job. So he manages us very differently. People, you can look at that and say, well, that's not fair. Like, no, it's not about being fair. It's about understanding that every person has their own interests, and whatever walk of life you come from, you're motivated, interested in the things that motivate and interest you. So as an employer or as a salesperson, you have to tap into that and approach it from that.
Yeah, we could literally make a whole episode out of this. We did, 249, I think.
249 has a bunch of it, so yeah, go back for that.
Yeah, we'll update it again probably in the future. But
and I think it's important to note of what Bill's saying is, if some of that stuff isn't right, then going to this next step, where today we're going to talk about feed pile management and how to make a good feed pile. If you're not doing some of that stuff right, or you're not communicating that, then whatever you think you're doing on that side isn't going to matter.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that. We're going to dive into, you know, some of the minutiae of pile management. But if your feeder is like, you know, putting the facer on is a lot of work, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Like, okay, well, like, then all this goes for naught. Like, that's step one, is making sure that the feeder actually is following the rules. Like, no, I'm going to ram my payloader bucket into the face of the pile and dig in 8 inches. Well, that's probably a bigger problem than, well, should we do a 3-to-1 slope or 2.75? You know, like, that's, yeah.
Rise over run.
Yeah. meanwhile, yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the back end of the payloader is coming up off the ground because Joe is digging in like he's
just ramming and digging.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? You've seen that.
I see it.
I've seen that. Have you not seen that?
No, I don't think I.
Like you're digging in a quarry. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's less and less all the time. And as an industry, we continue to.
Some of these are packed so tight now that mine it out like that.
Mining is a good word. Yeah.
Or your facer breaks and you have no other choice.
Right.
There's that. That.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But anyway, so.
I'm sorry.
As we were saying, we're going to probably get into some more feed pile aspects. So we're getting close to chopping season. We were discussing on our last episode, we're kind of in that last stretch here. Pollination is either done or wrapping up for most corn. We're starting to see the yellow milk coming into the cobs. We talked about, I think last week there were 11 states with dented corn. So, I mean, we're getting close to the end of the silage race. And that's just the beginning of the feed side. I mean, we've got the plant, you know, planting's done. We've managed weeds and pests the best we can. We're getting to silage now, and obviously the silage has got to go somewhere, whether it's a pile, a silo, or into a bag. And in this case, we're going to talk how to make a good feed pile. So where do you want to start, Bill?
So right from where you said about this year's crop, we're going to have monster crop this year, aren't we?
There's some really good-looking corn out there.
It's going to be very good.
We still got to finish out.
We do, and I've been tempering people of, like, we're going to be above average, and there's potential there to be the best crop ever, but we don't know that until we start chopping and looking, you know, counting cobs, looking at stuff. We're way better than last year, and just that alone will be big, and we're going to be above normal. But I'm just, the reason I do this is there's some people, you know, that let's do it in bushels, is they'll be like, it's going to be 250 bushel everywhere. And I'm like, no, we're not going to be like that. But it's going to be, you know, higher hundreds, low 200s corn in general,
If I've learned anything in this business, it's when you make generalizations, everything can be so regionalized. You know, weather is different even, you know, a mile down the road, 10 miles down the road. So guys have these expectations. They drive around the neighborhood. They see everything. And it can look really good. But, yeah, I think it's good that you're tempering expectations
correct.
There could be something, you know, that happened differently in this field, in this block of fields that, you know, everybody dreaming of 35-ton silage and, you know, these monster numbers. It's going to be good the way it looks,
right.
But we're not across the finish line yet.
But two things I would say, like inventories on farms in general seem very good, both corn silage carry over and alfalfa. So they have the feed there and then in general. And then another generalization is your yields are going to be above normal. So those two combined, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're going to have.
Alfalfa haylage yields have been phenomenal.
They've been soup.
So we already have less space on the feed pad.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just like in the last couple of weeks here talking with growers, with dairy, and like, we're already like, yeah. Now we're going to have above average corn silage. And then throw in the fact that the corn price is pretty not good.
It's not good. No.
So you've got lenders and nutritionists saying, hey, this would be the year. Just go buy, you know, man, yeah, go buy some silage. So you put all that together and you've got massive tons of corn. I was thinking on the way up here how, man, you know, I just didn't have a lot of phone calls this past season from guys saying my pile's a disaster, this is bad. And I think part of it is it was dry last summer, so we had less pathogen. Is that less mole? Saw less don, less as we were sampling piles, we saw less problems with that. But also I think it's because yields were down, guys made better shaped, better packed
piles.
Sure,
everything
was packed, and they said I need 10,000 tons, so They grew 9 of their own, and they bought 1,000 from their neighbor and said, okay, we've got enough. And so they were able to make, you know, fit it within the parameters. Haylage was kind of normal yield, so that wasn't. So I think part of the reason that we had good corn silage last year is because it got made on time, and
we had a good window.
It got dry enough in fall.
Yeah. And I agree with you, Bill, you weren't sitting on all of this to chop. You knew your crop was going to be below normal.
Yeah.
So you had to do it right.
You had to do it right, and you weren't forcing the pack tractor guy to make the mountain of silage that we might have to this year, so to speak.
Right.
Or we weren't having to make. In other words, usually when I get called to a pile that's gone off the rails, it's the wrong shape. You know, it's not packed well. And why does that happen? Because we're trying to put 10 pounds in an 8-pound hole.
Yeah.
So I really think that we got to really avoid the temptation to do that this year, as well as we have to just, the rules still apply. The rules of slope, the rules of packing still apply. And we've got to hit our dry matters. We've got to hit our packing. And you do a little math on packing, and I know another pack tractor is expensive, you know, $125 an hour to have somebody drive around on your pile or whatever that number is. You look at getting an extra, say you take your density from 20 pounds of dry matter to 22 or 18. Let's say you can literally add 10% more feed in the same area that you can if you poorly. Heck, you can put 25% more if you go from a really badly packed pile to a well-packed pile. You can get 20 to 25% more.
So it's a good first point is you don't necessarily – one of the ways to get more feed on this pile is just going to be – is pack it as tight
pack
as
it is possible. Every – yeah. And as we should be doing that every year,
right.
Obviously. It pays it, for it, itself.
And enough farms already are, so yep. Maybe you're past that.
Yeah, but it's really cool when I go out and check density. Man, it's – you can see the trend as an industry. Like we're
it's,
getting this thing
it
figured
is,
out.
Yeah. What's interesting you say about density is last year we were going to try to, so our goal is always to pack it, but have very little leachate coming off. So we want it the right moisture so that basically there's not a trickle of water coming out of that pile or very, very, very little, as least as possible. So one of the ideas for dry down wasn't to check whole plant moisture, was to let's press it to that density and then see how much water comes out or, you know, leach it. And then measure that and then use that to know, okay, if just this little bit comes out, we know we're good. So I got a grape press or like a fruit press and had like a big crank that you'd crank it down. And Bill, I could not even get close to that density in that tool because it physically wouldn't even press any harder. So I measured the volume, you know, measured the weighted out, measured the volume. Like you literally couldn't, and if you think about it, a lot of your packing comes from packing, but also comes from the amount of silage above it.
Sure.
And, you know, just gravity and how that works. But it's amazing to me how tightly we pack and how good that works and just makes all the processes better. Have you ever seen... are we reaching a breaking point now where like what is where no. You can't pack even more? You know what I mean? Like
there have been people say you're overpacking. Like, no.
You can't
just don't.
Yeah.
Just don't. All it takes is a one spot in the pile or bunker that doesn't get packed.
Right.
You start having just a little bit of mold or a little bit of pitch off and diesel fuel is cheap.
Right.
Just pack.
And
my litmus test is when I'm going around checking kernel processing and checking in on my customers when they're chopping, it's that if the guy in the pack tractor stops and gets out and talks to me, he failed. He fails the test.
Sure.
Because there's nothing that the inoculant monkey coming to your farm has to share with you that's as important as
packing the pile.
Pack to pile. Like that's the culturally, we need to have that as not the whatever. That needs to be like the glory position of pack
sure.
And packing. You can stop long enough to get the bag of chips and the cookies that I'm giving you, but
then get back in there. It's weight and time.
It's weight and time.
Just going.
It's not whether you have triples tracks, singles or duals. It's time and weight. And so that's another really commonly asked question I get is what kind of tire should I have? And the answer that we've come up with is it doesn't matter. It's a matter of time.
The kind that roll.
Unless they're tracks, but those roll. Yeah.
Those roll.
So, yeah. Yeah. My favorite sort of idiom, is that the right word? Like the farm that I work with that always has the highest or second highest milk production that I work with. The guy that runs our feed manager there is just most lovable guy you ever met and always wants to chat when I see him and, you know, see what's new or wants to tell me the latest thing going on the farm. And I just remember the first year of my job, I saw he was packing and like, oh, hey, there's Tom and he's up there packing. And I kind of waved to him and he looked at me and waved and he turned his head and he just kept packing. And I remember thinking, like, that's there's a reason that this farm gets that level of milk production and puts up the kind of numbers. And milk production's not everything, but these guys, it's a very, very, very successful, well-run dairy. It's among the elite in Wisconsin. And I thought, you know, that encapsulates the kind of cultural things they have going on. Is that guy's responsible for packing pile, and he knows, like,
I've
got to pack this pile. Yeah. This is a really important job. And
that's a unique one too, because it can be quickly, as you're pushing more feed up, you might not realize that 30 minutes wasted until you feed out or not at all. And you're right that just making sure you have the right amount of tractors and that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and moving around.
Right, because a lot of the packing can be based on the speed of harvest. You got so much feed coming in, guys feel like they've got to keep pushing the pile. And if you're limited, you're...
But I'll go back to what to your statement in that, like, it wasn't the fact that there would be 30 minutes less time on the tractor time on that pile. It was the fact that culturally, it was him as the leader of that department saying it's not okay to stop and chat with a salesperson
when
we're chopping corn.
It was a cultural statement
that he was making about what they were doing. If Tom the feed manager can do it, well then the next time the other guy on the tractor, he's got to go take care of some stuff, so he's going to park his tractor for a while for an hour, and you know it's the whole I don't know what the
yeah, like you'd have slip.
Yeah, the whole
management and just a slide into this but if it's like no, this thing
is the most important thing to do.
Like if that chopper's moving, this is moving.
Yeah,
and this is more important than chopper.
Right. Wow. There's nothing more important, and so that like I always felt like that set he was setting the cultural tone on that farm, and they who knows they're probably getting 115 pounds of milk or something insane 5 years ago. And you know that's why. Because all those little minute details were, they didn't get 115 pounds of milk because he didn't stop and talk to the inoculant clown. It was one of a million things that they did right culturally on that farm. And yeah.
I could see the desire to stop and talk, though, too. I've never packed a pile. I've done a lot of the other things, cutting, hauling loads. But I've never packed a pile. And the repetitiveness of, like, up and down and up.
You're literally like going over the same square. Looking at, the fun of farming tractor work is you... It's kind of like driving where you get to look around.
Right.
And, oh, there's a deer over in that corner. In the pile, it's...
Yep, you're just...
Hey, there's the inoculant guy with the candy bar. And he's staying, you know, and you're sitting there the whole time giving guys
Snickers?
The trucks.
I love Snickers.
Yeah.
I work with a farm that they do their own... They milk 2,000 cows. They do their own chopping. It takes them 10 to 14 days. And, yeah, you're in a tractor.
You don't get... And you got to listen on the radio all the guys doing the cool stuff. You know,
yeah. Hey, look at that.
Yeah, you got to listen to the guy in the chopper going, you know, and you're kind of just, yeah. It to me, have you guys ever had to like be at a game, but you're working like the gate or like, you know, like when you're at something, but you got to kind of work it.
Your focus has to be somewhere else as opposed to what everyone else is there to do.
Right. And I feel like that's what you are in the pack tractor is like you just get to kind of. Listen to what's going on, and I wonder what field they're in. I wonder what it's doing.
Right, and they're passing the, you know, like, hey, look at that cool truck. Oh, yeah, look at that. You know, yeah, there's a deer over there. Now, meanwhile, you're looking at three concrete walls for 10 days. Yeah. Yeah, so it's that is my fear, like, that we're going to be trying to make really big, crazy, poorly packed, poorly sloped piles, and the piles are going to get so long that we're not going to pack them as well because we're going to push feed so far, and so... Yeah, the magic number, we were talking about slope earlier, is 3-1. That's really what we've found that the rise over run needs to be 3-1 or less. So the real simple way to do the math is, so your face should be 6 times more than the height. So if you have a 120-foot wide pile, you should have a maximum 20-foot tall pile. If you do that, you inoculate it, you pack it well, use a good oxygen barrier, cover it rapidly, you're going to have success. But as soon as you start getting those piles steeper, man, all bets are off. You just can't pack. Those tractors slip as they go up. Tires don't stay in the right place. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever see guys getting away with, so it'd be like, 2.5. Is there like a number where you've seen if you...
La. No. 3-1. 3-1.
It is that.
It's the law.
It's the law. I'm half joking,
I think there'll be guys, like I said, they're going to push it no matter what. And then you start, well, maybe I'll do this or we'll start doing that. But all of a sudden that slip, like you say, the pile doesn't do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be as... tightly packed in spots. And
then you're going to have top layer mold and Yeah. As well, the other part, I remember, and then covering, like as soon as you cut the corn plant, as soon as that chopper hits it, it begins your corn stalk plant begins to rot. Okay. Like, is that right? It's still alive, but you have begun the rotting.
That's a good point.
Like the first bite of the apple starts to turn brown if you don't keep eating it. Yeah.
Yep. So the faster we can cover pile, the better. That does not mean like every day or whatever that we have to have it, that there's this, but regardless, the faster we can get plastic on, the better, or the faster we can get fresh silage on. Can I say Todd Willer's name on here, even though he's a customer of yours and legendary good friend of mine and my former employee? We used to always go back and forth on my silage piles. We'd always have a good time with it. He would always make fun of the oddball shape of my silage piles. Okay. And your pile looks like a pregnant camel. What is the hell? Why can't you make a normal looking pile like everybody else? And we always had a good laugh about that, especially the pregnant camel thing. And the reason was because I was always like, because I want to get plastic on. I want to get plastic on. So if this pile is going to take us 7 days to chop, to make, I want to get plastic on as soon as I can start putting plastic on. I want to get that on. So all I can do is estimate how tall to go, how low to go, and what angle. And does that make sense? Like, right. I didn't have the. I'm willing to forego the prettiness of coming back the last day and shaping it all beautifully,
looking like one
homogeneous, beautiful pile,
one big mound.
For the efficiency of getting it covered, getting it.
So,
how much feet would it vary?
A lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot. You know, you're looking, you're saying, all right, well, I've got X amount of acres and I've used X amount of the length of my pile. So therefore this is how tall it needs to be. Let's put two sheets of plastic on, fellas.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you get to the second half of your harvest and like, oh, this is way better corn than the first half. And so you have to make that
then
higher.
You go higher. Sure.
And so and then the last day, oh, I guess we had that last 100 acres. That was pretty crappy. So then
it goes
down like that was,
and that's okay. You're saying,
I think, yes, that's almost, to me, it's a sign of, it's like a respect. Like when I see piles like that, it's like, yeah, cause
so pregnant camels are better
than perfect
jelly rolls.
There, yes. Don't choose quick covering over beauty of your piles. That's my, like, you got to get some fresh silage on everything every single day. Get plastic on as quick as you can. And if that means your pile doesn't look perfect, so be it. Take it as a badge of honor that you made a pregnant camel pile, but at least you got plastic on.
Yeah.
And the other part of covering that I would go back to from the practical versus the science thing is, it is best that the minute you put the last load of silage on and pack that a couple times, that you get plastic on, right? We can all agree that scientifically that is the... That's the recipe to have a perfect pile, right? As soon as you're done making the pile, you plastic on. So it's midnight, and the last load gets up there, and he packs until 12:30. All right, let's put plastic on. Yes, in scientific theory, that is perfect and ideal. But I'll be the first one to say no. Just wait till tomorrow morning. Wait till tomorrow morning when we can see. When everybody's had some sleep and some Diet Mountain Dew, and we can come out here and we can put this plastic on perfectly and put the tires exactly where we want. No one's going to get hurt. No one's going to get backed over by a payloader. I would rather choose safety and doing a perfect, meticulous job of covering or tire placement than saying I want to get it done within 5 minutes after the pile is done. So that sometimes I get a little squawk back from people saying, no, it's better to do it soon. You know, if it's midnight and if it's going to rain, obviously that's a whole nother.
Right. There's, but know where everybody's at. You know, is this the fourth quarter and everybody's ready to make a push, or is this the second overtime and everybody's exhausted and you're going to have other problems to deal with if you don't just sort of take a break and do it the right way as well.
Yeah, I would much rather see guys come back tomorrow morning at 6, get some rest. We can see what we're doing. It's light.
Yeah.
No one's going to get hurt. And we're just, Can I share one of the, one of the most interesting episodes of employee management that ever happened to me in my career was surrounding that, and that was
pile covering.
Pile covering was
Pile covering is a
That can
you need a lot of people.
Yep.
Yeah. It sucks.
It's tough work.
It's, no one likes doing it.
It's to me, it's the small square baling of a large farm.
Absolutely.
Is no, it's, to me, it's quicker than I small squared bales all summer. But it's as hard as that, and you got to call all your buddies and try to pay them 20 or 40 bucks or whatever. You know what? I don't know what the going rate is. I have no idea. I'm just that's what it used to be to pay somebody bailing. So yes, I could see where employee management through that would be unique.
We were chopping haylage, and just out of nowhere, it's like 9 o'clock at night, and a storm. All of a sudden, we look at the radar, and oh man, like not just a shower, but a
like this
major storm came out of nowhere and is headed right for us.
Like
within, we might get the last load on.
Yeah,
like we're chopping 20 miles away, and oh my gosh! So it was all hands on. Like I had 4 or 5 guys only. Whatever, you know, it's 10 o'clock. Whatever. It's at night. You don't have a bunch of people around. You're not expecting this. In the middle of chopping, and oh no, what do we do? So we got some plastic, put it over the pile, and then. Like the wind started blowing, like, well, there's only 4 of us. We're not going to be able to get tires on that. I said, you know what? I'm going to sacrifice that piece of plastic, take the payloader and a tractor, and just drive over the top, just to hold the plastic on.
Right.
I'll be out a little bit of plastic, but my pile's not going to get ruined. Let's just do that.
And we're not going to blow away.
No one's going to get hurt.
We're not going to be heroes out here.
Yeah. Take the tractor, take the payloader, and drive it right over the top of the pile, right on the plastic, and hold it down. Tomorrow morning, we'll throw all that plastic in the dumpster and
figure it. Yeah.
But we're going to save whatever thousands of tons of feed from not getting 3 inches of rain on. Okay. So we did that and okay, whatever. So a couple days later, we finished the pile and it's time to put the plastic on. And one of my employees gets in his payloader.
Ooh. And
he's going to bring his tires. And guess what he did?
Drives right
over the plastic.
Well, we did it a couple days ago.
Why can't I do this now?
Yeah.
I just remember like standing there like I can't believe he just like what did I just fall into some cosmic bunny hole to another universe or did this just happen? But it was a great lesson for me. Like he saw me do that.
Yep.
So therefore it's okay if I do that. He didn't understand all the other whole explanation. He wasn't a bad employee, he wasn't stupid, he was mimicking what he saw the boss do. And I'm just like, all right, like, okay. Like it was just a good lesson for me and everybody else there. Like, yeah, employees do what they see.
Yeah.
So we, like, had to have a chat afterwards and whatnot. But, like, yeah, it was, I'm sure that, I don't remember if we used that plastic or not. But, yeah, he didn't even bat an eyelash. He just drove right on. Like, just like he saw us do the other night before the rain, you know, just. So, whatever. Yeah. I digress. But it was a good lesson for all of us in people management that, yeah. If you're a manager, you've got to set the tone. Like, someone's always watching kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. So, we got to pack.
Have
good slope.
We have 3-to-1 slope. Yep.
How high is too high? Is there too high?
There is not
as
a
the slope
high.
Is good.
As long as the slope is 1, I think we've seen more pile collapses in the last couple of years. Okay. We've seen some real pile collapses, and we don't know why. Quite frankly, we don't know what the deal is that this year we've had more pile collapses.
Is that when it's bumped up to last year's corn size, it collapses there, or this is just random? Random and by collapse you mean that all of a sudden they'll just be
the face just falls out on you.
Yeah,
and. We used to think it was too wet and too short, but we had several of them this year that were perfect length, perfect dry matter, and when some of it's BMR and some of it's not.
Right.
All of them, these are well-managed, well-packed, good, well-run dairies that all of a sudden you come out the next, you see a big, giant fault line, and 2 days later, blah, you've got a week's worth of feed laying on the concrete in the middle of July. And so... we're trying to figure this out. We're trying to see if we're starting to wonder if piles are being packed. And I guess we're doing a podcast here. One theory is that it's we're packing them so flat. We're making them we're so much more horizontally instead of steep.
Like the ramp.
The ramp.
Yes.
The ramp.
Yeah. Because you're right. I used to remember ramps being like, holy man. Yep. And now they're more of a runway to it than a...
More of a runway to it. And is it something like that where we're having to make these long runways because we're chopping with five machines now instead of one. So we got to get out of everybody's way and take all this feed in so quickly. Again, the densities are fine. Do we need to start packing from the sides as well as the front? Just some other theories. If anybody's got any theories or whatnot, I'm open, but we think it has something to do with that. Making something in there where there one of those layers happens to be dry.
Sure, you get a dry. You think it's wet? Like a dry field fields.
So inconsistency in the product,
right? Somewhere in those layers, somewhere in that like strata, is a layer that doesn't. It is. It's like an onion.
Yeah,
it's a geological excavation, but like one of those layers in there doesn't want to adhere to the one above it. And then all of a sudden, that's got 20 feet of silage face sitting on top of it, and then it just falls forward instead of...
So we're essentially creating a sinkhole in the pile.
Yeah. So, again, we don't know. We thought we did. But these are really well-managed top-end farms. And
I could see even if you had a field with, say, way less start, like just didn't put on much of a cob thrown in there, like you said, different moisture, that would mess up your... You're trying to build something that has structure to it to hold something way above it.
Yeah.
And in a silo, it didn't matter. In a bag, it for sure, like, it didn't matter because it had structure around it to hold it up. But now with large piles like that, and bunkers, you need that layer to hold.
So the only common factor between all the piles I saw were they. Again, I'm going to go back to it. The density was perfect, or not perfect, but it was very, very good. But it was filled using a bunch of machines at once, and that more than one machine at a time. And it was made very, very horizontally, very like that runway instead of the pushing up.
That is interesting, Bill. In that the amount of it blows me away the amount of just horsepower now, even in one chopper. And now many farms are obviously chopping with multiple choppers. And in haylage, I see that, or in alfalfa harvest, in my brain, the weakest link's always, not always the chopper, but just for me, it's chopper getting it dry enough to chop. But most of the time, the weakest link now is getting enough cut and the merging.
Yeah.
We can chop.
Oh my gosh.
John Deere, Claus, Krohn, all the chopper companies, New Holland. It's amazing to me how much these machines can just eat corn and alfalfa.
And you think on a kernel processor, it's going through those rollers that are less than a millimeter apart.
Wow.
It's filling a semi in 5 minutes. Sometimes I've seen those meters go to 400 ton an hour.
Wow.
And so it's putting it through a millimeter gap.
Yeah.
So the silos that you had here at Tilth World headquarters, I don't know if those were 600-800-ton silos.
Yeah.
And you spent half your damn childhood,
half
your fall standing by the blower, running load after load. You know, you'd fill that in 2 hours now.
Right.
From the time I...
Right. So that brings up a good point in that even in silos, I've heard when we're filling those so quickly, the feed's been different because it doesn't have time to sort of settle down pat.
I would agree with that.
That used to take... for sure a couple weeks, and even a week now when you're filling them in a day, if you can, which some places can, that things are different than in that feed.
Yeah.
So that comes to the weakest link in the corn silage. Do you think that typically is the amount of push tractors or pack tractors?
Yeah, I would say that's where we're at now.
And is that because we can't even physically fit more on there?
I think
there's a limitation to, you only have so much real estate.
Yes. Yeah. So that is a tricky one, too, how do you add more to that area? Have you ever seen, is there a synchronized way that you've seen certain ones drive that seem to be
I like one of the farms that I work with, it's not where they drive, but it's how they dump.
Okay.
In that, so they have their bunker is roughly 8 trailer widths wide. Okay, so yep. If the trailer is 10 feet wide, we'll say it's more than that. It's not exactly.
It's backing up to dump.
Yep, backing up to dump. So they back up, and then they when the truck, instead of just randomly.
It's how it feels sometimes,
want,
yeah.
It's somebody's calling out the numbers, position 1, 2, 3, 4.
Are they taking, like, five. Sidewalk chalk out there? You just kind of know.
You just kind of know.
Yeah.
Giant hopscotch board, right? You go there. You
yeah.
There.
That is what they do.
It would, yeah, it would be almost nice to paint, like, bay. Like when you drive up to a loading dock.
Right.
Yep.
You know, you're in bay 7 today, and there's lines, and they yep. know right where to go. So you're saying have that.
If not the hopscotch lines, but like a system,
right?
Like
right,
they actually right. have a system that's where you dump. That you, if you don't have, if you come in and you didn't, because I've driven truck there, like if you don't see the guy ahead of you, they'll just tell you, yep, about position 3, about, you know,
sure,
position 3, 4, 5, like yeah, it works yeah. pretty well. And then so you're always so
right.
That makes sense. You're always,
they're not dumping in the same spot all the time, so the guy's not just pushing new yep. feed all the time. And
right.
You know, so I think that works.
And you're saying work that in a line, you know, so start in position 1, and then the guy goes to 2 to 8, and then back to yep. 1.
And you know, I've,
instead of just wherever, and then the pusher guy's got to figure out, well, how I'm going to get that feed where I want yeah. it to go. He's just got to back up and
exactly.
push.
He's got to back up and push, and then he can start packing again.
So I think, yeah, that, yeah, the mentality probably early on was, well, I need to get it close to the tractor so he doesn't have to drive, like waste time driving over here to push feed up. But really,
he might not be in the spot he wants that. Yeah,
right.
And if yeah. you've ever driven a pack tractor, how many times have you been like, I cannot believe he just dropped that load?
Is it really?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So you're like, what the hell? Just can he see I'm in the middle of a big hole? Like,
right.
And if you're driving truck, you're just trying not to hit anybody. You know,
yeah,
you're just trying
you're
to
just dumping it.
You're trying to unload so you can get back.
Yeah,
and get the
you're,
next one. Yeah.
Last
you're,
thing you're, you know, like so. Occasionally,
no, right. You're not trying to be.
You're not like doing rude. The math. Like, ooh, okay, I see this.
Right, yeah. You're exactly right.
Let me get out my protractor. Ooh, yeah, we're not quite 3-1. I should put my pile here.
Meanwhile, the pack tractor driver yeah. is thinking that.
Right.
He is thinking, like, how can that. Dumb, blah, 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 not how can you possibly think that that's a good idea? And again, I've been on that side of the coin where I'm driving truck and I'm like, I just don't want to hit anybody. Like, that's yes. my thing. I want to get this thing unloaded and get out of the way, not back into anybody, not have the pack tractor hit me, not drive over the guy taking samples. The last thing right. on my mind is exactly to your point, like, 3-1. Yeah, that's yeah.
So. You'd like this feed on this side, in this corner. Yeah.
So yeah, having been on both sides, like, yeah, let's come up with a system.
Yeah.
Come up with some sort of. It doesn't mean screaming and yelling at everybody. It just means having a system of dumping.
Before we run out of time, because I know we're on a little bit of a clock today. We talked before about face.
Yes.
Like so, face I think is an important part. It's something I've heard other people talk about. You know, we had a little bit of back and forth before we started recording. So, what do you think is the most important part the face plays in the pile process?
Okay, so it's. It is super important that as we're making these monster piles this fall, that before we do this, or as we're doing it, we got to do a little math and make sure that we're going to take at least 6 inches off the pile. Not 6 inches off when we're in the ramp, but 6 inches when we're at, you know, Mount Vesuvius in the middle.
Yep.
You know, like, we got to...
That is what the...
That's what we're going to see.
No, I feel like when, yeah, people are practicing to climb mountains and just climb the side of the
yes. piles.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to New Chester Dairy and, like, throw your grappling hook up there. And but, yeah, that's, yeah, I think we got it. And it's just math. You know what I mean? It's just, it's density times length times width times height. And then to know how many tons of feed we need to feed in a day's time, are we going to move at least 6 inches? And I'll put a plug in that. There's also specific inoculants that you use that have Buchneri bacteria that do a superior job of preserving upon feed out, so that if we're not going to be at 6, or if we're only going to be at 6 or 7, it'd be a really good idea to use one of those inoculants, like Xylosulf FC. That's a real thing. I mean, that is a sort of accepted science in our industry that Buchneri inoculants will preserve feed better on feed out. You'll have extra acetic acid. So instead of mechanically adding acetic acid with a TMR saver, a TMR fresh preservative, you use a Buchneri that then the silage itself makes extra acetic acid to preserve it. So that's another consideration as we're making these piles is remember, on even if we can get 3-1, even if we can have it all that math works, we still got to feed it out.
Right.
So before we ever start, if I'm a dairy right now, I'm sitting down with a nutritionist and the feeder, and I've got a laser or something like that. Literally, I am drawing out, starting to think about where is this all going to go. Let's think about it. And I'm also going to talk to my custom operator to see where I rank.
Yeah.
On the when can I get you here? I know we're only at August 7th, but
I feel like lately that ranking is either first or last.
Right.
There's no like. I don't know. It just feels like the middle is just not exist. You're either like at the beginning or the end. There's no. But you're right. Talking. Well, and having those those are usually at some farms. Those are the people that actually make your pile too.
Yep.
I would say that. So to me, this whole pile talk is what is unique is I feel, and this is a question for you, Bill, do you feel it's more of an art than a science?
No. Okay. This is a science now. It is
good.
It is math. And
so that part is making sure you're having the conversation with your custom harvesters about this is what I want the math to look like.
Yeah, this is what I want the dimensions to.
I just know, and we're going to offend some of them in some ways, but. Enough of those guys. They've made piles forever. They say, no, I know. I'll get it all on there. I know. And you say, yes, you're...
Yeah, I want to get it all on there. But,
right.
But,
and this is what we're facing this year. Yeah. We're going to have more feed up here than last year. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's the math. And I like that because I was going art versus science, but you're right. It is doing math. It is doing the slopes. It's doing... the amounts and making sure that it works out.
It gets back to what Bill said before about, it doesn't have to be pretty. If the math works out, who cares what it looks like? If you're going to be feeding a better quality, have less waste, I hate looking at that pile every day. Well, all right, but the milk tank is filling and you're not hauling waste feed out in the field all the time. Like, I think I'd take it. Take ugly over...
Yeah, I'm thinking what you guys are being cautiously optimistic. I was thinking about this as we're talking. You guys don't want to say, everybody, hey, you're going to have 30-ton silage this year. And I'm here saying, hey, everybody, my worst case scenario is everybody has 30-ton silage and make crazy piles. You guys have a different, your worst case scenario is you tell everybody it's 30 and it ends up being 25.
Right.
Mine is plan like it's going to be 30.
30, yeah.
Plow this thing up. Figure out where you're going to go with that extra 5,000 tons.
Yep.
Is that going to go in a neighbor's bunker and I'm going to have to haul it back? It sounds crazy, but that's, to me, a lot better option than having a big, giant pile of doom that doesn't feed well and collapses and has a bunch of mold on it or whatever. As well as back to the thing about talking to custom operator, would you agree that all this corn got planted like in the same 20-minute window this spring?
Yeah. Less than 20 minutes. There's literally a four-day window. I was talking to a nutritionist about it yesterday, and I have not seen a crop be so... I mean, differences. Again, we're making... But in general, it all got planted within the same 4 days. We had a lot of heat in July, which kind of pushed it all together. Because having that heat then made it pollinate at a very similar time.
Okay.
So, yes, it is all going to be ready in a very short window. Now, there's going to be day lengths. There's going to be a window there. It's just you're going to have to be ready to be on that window. And with a custom guy, it's going to be tough to be first or last this year. And in the middle, they're going to show up probably a week late for you, maybe two. So it's just going to be
that's the other doomsday scenario I'm thinking about. Todd, you have 5,000 cows. You're and Matt's the custom operator. You're his biggest customer. All right, when you have that pull of being, I milk 400 cows. I don't have that same pull. You're going to go to his place. Not only are you going to be chopping 30-ton corn? His banker told him to get as much as you can. So
right. He's going to be there longer.
You're going to be there longer. It's all going to get chopped at once. I'm just saying, like, maybe I got to go at 30% dry matter or whatever. Strike that from the record, please. But what I'm saying is maybe you got to go on the early side.
It's, right. It's a pick-your-poison scenario.
Well, the more acres, the more you have to kind of make concessions on that side of the equation just to get... through what you need to get through.
I'm throwing that out there as the resident pessimist looking at this harvest.
Yeah.
Like, just remember, like, your chopper guy, instead of having 5 days at his big customer, now has eight.
Yep.
And it's all going to get ready at once. So I'm just, whatever. Of the many things that we have to have conversations about in the next month, I think that needs to be One of them, yeah. Is where are we going to go with all this, and what order are we going? Yeah. Not to be the bearer of whatever. It should be good news, right? We're all going to have monster
what,
yields.
What
right?
always blows me away, that is like, hey, we got all this yield, and then you can just see it and fart, like, where am I
going
to
go? Where's it going, yeah.
And that it, that you'd think, well, just go higher, go wherever, and it's not
fill a bag.
Easy. Yeah. Do you think this year might be something to consider of tradition, say a farm that has one giant corn silage pile, should they try to make that giant corn silage pile bigger, or should they put up two piles?
That was actually can? My question
so
as well.
I'm not dodging your question.
Okay.
But I am going to say that if we can't get a 3-to-1 slope and we can't feed enough off, then we're going to have to, it would be better to think outside the box and make another pile somewhere.
Right.
Than it would be to ram, make a 2-to-1 slope, only feed 3 inches a day next August when it's hot. And I think when I think about the highest producing herds that I work with, the most efficient, you're starting to see these little bitty piles pop up on their feed pads, and you think, what's that? Well, that's the second crop that didn't fit in the bunker. We probably could have rammed it on there, but we thought we'd put it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be a pain in the rear end to have to.
It is. It's a pain to cover, a pain to fill. But you're right. Without being on that side of it, we as well are seeing that trying to manage it better and say, okay, if I can't fit it there, you know, on that giant pile, I got to do this to make it right.
So a lot of guys do that where they got caught with rain. That's been an eye-opener for me. Like, what's that haylage pile? Oh. There's 100 ton over there that we weren't going to get it before it was too wet. We didn't want to wreck our big pile.
Right.
So we put it on a separate pile. We're going to feed it up right away. I'm like, yeah, it's a pain.
Right.
Right. It's a pain at the time and whatever. But yeah, I would, in the grand scheme of things, if you can't make a 3-to-1 slope pile that with the correct amount of face to keep it fresh every day, we got to start thinking about think outside the box. So yeah.
All right, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. We want to be respectful of your time. We appreciate you coming in today.
Anytime. Bill. I love this. This is all good. I always appreciate. I'm always honored to have you guys here. I'm always marveled at what you guys have built over the last 10, 15 years. It's really. I don't think you guys realize what you built over the last 10, 15 years. You know, I don't know. We just go out and like crop scout and stuff and like make nutrient management plans. But no, it's really cool to see what you guys have built.
We're just guys that like looking at corn, Bill.
You are. Yeah. And how many acres do you guys touch now?
And what's been fun is we get having conversations like this with you that we can go at a deeper level and talk about things. Because even this day, I see piles all the time, and it amazes me what I learn about that and how I thought you'd tell me today was a little more about the art, and it is about the math, and that's great. It's fun to learn that, hey, look at the advances we made in ag and where we've gotten. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, to wrap that up, like if you can take the best pack tractor driver on planet Earth, you know, one of those guys that he could circumcise a frog with that push blade, right?
Yep.
But if you make your pile too steep and too big, it doesn't matter.
You're sending them
all up. Packing the world won't save it.
All the packing in the world isn't going to save it. So we got to be disciplined this year. We've got to think ahead. We've got to be disciplined and not be tempted to just make it higher. Like
plan your work your plan.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again, Bill, for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks to all the listeners.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
And happy farming.